It's time for another episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur.
United States, but also overseas. I believe today we're, if I remember correctly, last I checked, we were in about a dozen countries throughout the world with some type of a presence. And every country that we made a commitment to getting into, we would hire a sales rep there to represent us kind of on the ground, the local presence, you know, kind of a local interpretation of, you know, how the product works culturally and whatnot. So there was a period of time where it was very, it was very kind of touch and go in terms of, developing the product, building out our team, and all the elements that I think you deal with, that every entrepreneur deals with as they're getting their venture up and running. As we grew, things became, a little bit more stable and, the challenges just, they're still there. They just look and feel different. You know, you're dealing with different things as you're kind of growing. You have an established board of directors, you're bringing in more outside capital. So a lot of pieces to the puzzle that, ultimately would come into play. But I stepped away, I stepped down as CEO of the company after we got to a certain point of traction. That was about 15 months ago in June of 2000.
Oh, so just recently.
Yeah, it was a little over a year ago.
Okay.
A little over a year ago. So I had sold my the lion's share of my stake in the business to a couple of outside investors.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
My name is Derek Wright. I'm a serial entrepreneur and the co-founder of Vivo Launch Partners, operating partner to technology startups on the rise in South Florida.
So you're originally a guy from, you're up from up here, right?
I am. Yes, I'm originally from just outside of Boston. And right. I did live in New Jersey for 3 years. I lived in Jersey City from 04 to 06.
Okay. And I see you've been in New Hampshire.
Yep. So I'm from New Hampshire originally, southern New Hampshire, an hour outside of Boston. Okay. And I went to school up in the northern part of New Hampshire, up in ski country, at a little school called Plymouth State University.
Okay.
And after that, I lived in Boston for some time, but then I was moved around to work quite a bit for a number of years. So I lived in Denver, I lived in Kansas City, I lived in Jersey City for a little while, and then Providence, Rhode Island.
And that was all in the insurance business?
It was all in the insurance business, yeah.
Mass Mutual. I started with Mass Mutual in law school, so 92. And I guess
remember you mentioned that.
Yeah, 98. I moved to Columbus, Ohio, and I joined Nationwide, worked in their home office, and then for about 2 years. And then I came back here, and my law practice, just started taking off because I knew so many insurance guys that they all needed, wills for their clients and business agreements for their clients. And
sure.
We were doing for comp in those days, although the laws have changed a little bit. Okay, so take me through. So you've been all in the Northeast. You've seen the country. You now live in Florida. If I remember right, you said you had two kids, right?
I do.
Okay, so we could talk all about your personal life, put that out on the internet, but your wife probably doesn't want that too much. but let's talk. I know that you do a lot of entrepreneurial stuff with Vivo Launch Partners, and we can get into that, but maybe you want to take me up to how you got into, that business, what businesses you had sold, and that whole story.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll take you through kind of the early years. I, just out of college, I sort of stumbled into the insurance industry for a lack of, really having a clear direction what I wanted to do. And I inadvertently found myself in sales, which was a really great path for me. It kind of played to my personality. I really enjoyed You know, having something that, you know, didn't require the overhead at the time to, you know, launch a business or whatnot, but had a tremendous amount of upside to it. And
you had never done sales before at that point?
I'd never done sales. I was just out of college at the time.
Okay, good.
So that was, you know, that was kind of the first phase of my career. But, you know, I quickly realized in being in that role that, you know, really my real aspiration was to get into management and leadership role in some form or another. And that's kind of how I crafted that after a relatively short period of time. So I spent 3 years in sales, ultimately went into the role of sales development manager, which was with New York Life, where I started my career. And my role basically evolved from there over the next over a decade, where my, you know, my primary function was to recruit, train, and develop sales reps in a number of offices throughout the country. So I had a, you know, I had kind of a, I guess a knack, if you will, for not only identifying talent, but also to, you know, identify what the hot buttons were with people to help ultimately make them more productive. You know, and for some people that was, they needed more help prospecting and some of the talking points to get conversations started. Some people were really inherently good at that, and some people needed help closing. Some people, were real disorganized and just needed, an element of organization to manage their sales process a little bit better. But, you know, that became my job and really what I did for over a decade, which was to, really groom salespeople to achieve what they wanted to when they came into the industry. Okay. So that was a meaningful chunk of my career. It took me to 38, 39 years old. And, to be frank with you, I really enjoyed that stage of my career. Was all that I'd known at that point. It was 16, 17 years in at that point. And, the reality was, I really had in my late 30s, I had this entrepreneurial itch. And, you know, I'd grown up in an entrepreneurial household. My father was an entrepreneur. He was a self-employed photographer, had a staff of 9-10 people at its peak. Classic small business. And, you know, I watched that as I was growing up. And I think over time, as I matured in my career, you know, I came to realize that I really, you know, wanted to be my own boss. I had really always had some level of autonomy given what I did in sales. But, you know, really what I wanted to do is I wanted to start my own thing. The question was always, you know, what would I do? Would I just arbitrarily think of a business that, would fit the bill? Or, you know, was there an idea or a concept that, you know, really I could, you know, really get behind for some, you know, some bigger picture vision.
You know, and being at New York Life or Mass Mutual, I mean, you could have gone the general agency route, right? You're probably in management at that point.
Absolutely. And I think that was really what that path normally would look like. And, you know, I considered going down that path and that really, I guess to be candid about it, I think that probably was my path for a long time in my mind. And there was, there's an element of entrepreneurship that's woven into that industry. But what I really wanted my own thing. And, one of the things that kind of came to me in 2014, 2015 or so, you know, I started really paying attention to how technology was changing the landscape of practically every industry. And in the insurance business, in my role and as a sales manager, one of the things that used to drive me absolutely crazy was the lack of insights that I had into, especially as my team grew, the lack of insights into what they were actually doing and where they were, you know, finding struggles and where they were succeeding on a day-to-day basis. You know, we would define those as, you know, KPIs, your leading indicators, if you will. Everything from somebody's prospecting numbers to the fall off from one stage of a sales process to the next. And I think a lot of organizations, not just in the insurance business, but in a lot of organizations in general, there's a lack of visibility, or there has been in the past, lack of visibility into what that storyline really looks like. The only thing we really had to pay attention to was a conversation that we might have with the rep on a weekly basis, and then we'd look at their sales results.
Right,
so there wasn't really a lot to it. And, you know, as technology started really, you know, reshaping the way a lot of industries were kind of running, mobile apps were becoming the, you know, commonplace in practically every element of our lives.
Right.
I said, what if we put activity management on a mobile device, and instead of somebody, you know, submitting an Excel spreadsheet or an archaic type of worksheet to their sales manager at the end of the week, what if they were tracking it in real time from a smartphone? And what if we gave those that data in a manner that would be usable to sales leaders. Right. And so that's what we set out to do. And that became the concept that became really my first entrepreneurial pursuit. We founded a company that was originally called Vivo Mobile. And we renamed the company a couple of years after that. We renamed the company 25 Point Systems, which essentially was rooted in some timeless ideology from the insurance business that played into how we tracked activity. The 25 Point System was an activity-based system that basically would give a certain number of points for each activity that a rep would have on a day-to-day basis. And the object was to get 25 points every single day. So I grew up with that system. We really used that as the ideology behind how we developed software around this. But around 2016, we actually launched our first iteration of the product. We had contracted with a firm out of India. They had built our first version of the product. We launched that, and the response was really, really good.
And you started with the insurance business and in the financial business, working with those kind of guys, or?
We did, and that was the industry that we really spent the lion's share of the time that I spent with the company. We really focused on that industry because we knew it really well.
Right.
I had a couple of partners in it with me, and we knew that space really, really well. We knew the dynamics. We knew the pain points. So we played to that. The first thing that we did was we took that to some of the big names. We took it to the Mass Mutuals and the New York Lifes and the Northwestern Mutuals. And we were too new. Our product was too undeveloped. And so, you know, we got a lot of, you know, come back and see us when you got some traction.
If I remember right, Mass Mutual had something called the one card system. It was a manual system. Now that might have predated you.
No, that concept's actually been around a long time, and I'm very familiar with it. I do. Very.
It must be electronic now if it's still around.
It is. I'm sure it's. Yeah. I'm sure it's in electronic form in a number of ways.
Right, but it's a similar concept. It's teaching these guys how to track because they don't bill hourly. Obviously, they work on commission. So you want to be able, as the sales manager, to be able to track their activity, what they're doing, are they doing the right things? Why are they not making business? That type of stuff, right?
Yeah, you want to be able to identify performance problems before they lead to somebody coming in and, you know, with a resignation letter, or you know, you have to terminate somebody for, you know, lack of performance. You know, the idea was to get ahead of that. And that's, you know, that's what a system like that does.
Okay. All right.
So we shifted gears a little bit from selling to some of the big insurance companies when we first launched this, and we ended up going the branch office route, and we would go to individual branch offices and we would talk to a managing partner or a general agent at an agency that had 40 advisors, 50 reps, et cetera. And we found sort of a sweet spot there to help us get launched. And we launched our first iteration of the product with about 300 users, 19 branch offices, if I remember correctly. And the response was tremendous. We had, we had managers that were, you know, just, you know, absolutely ecstatic about the data that they now had at the palm of their hands. And what was interesting about what we did with the product, and this, you know, really became, you know, kind of a, you know, a core aspect of what our product, our platform became, was that we gamified it. So we turned the, you know, the kind of mundane aspect of tracking activity into a game. And we created leaderboards. We created a, you know, a community feed that, you know, somewhat resembled, you know, what you'd see in a news feed on your Facebook page, et cetera. And the idea was to engage people within their organization. So if you and I were on the same sales team, I would be able to see what you're doing. You'd be able to see what I'm doing in real time.
Right. So it's almost like a sales contest all the time.
24/7 sales contest. Exactly right.
Okay. It's a good concept because I find, especially in the insurance business, these guys tend to, for some reason, when it's the time of year where they qualify for things, all of a sudden their production goes up. that doesn't make sense, but I guess people are driven by competition, you know?
Well, listen, it's, you know, sales is a tough business to begin with. And I still live this today. I mean, I wake up in the morning when I have for, you know, for almost 20 years, and I wake up in the morning thinking about where my next prospect is going to come from. And I think the consistency of, the consistency of that thought process is what, you know, allows people to have some level of sustainable success over the course of their careers, regardless of what industry that you're in.
I agree. Well, some industries are less tangible than others. But, yeah, I mean, look, salespeople and, you know, law's not that different. I have things that are ongoing all the time for clients, but a day doesn't go by because I grew up in the sales business where I don't wake up thinking, okay, where's our next piece of business coming from, you know?
Exactly.
It'll be the day when you don't have any business that you start. That's not to say you want to start thinking about it.
Very true. Not a good problem to have.
Yeah. All right. Your voice just got a little tinny again for some reason. Weird.
How's that?
It's on your end. No, it's yeah. Your voice is like scratchy almost. Mine doesn't sound that way.
No, you sound clear.
All right, now you're coming in clearer. It's going away for some reason. It comes and goes.
I'm gonna leave.
Maybe
my
it's the
right
maybe
it
the elephants that are running over your head. Now it's clear.
All right, good.
All right, so I'm interested. So this is interesting. So I have met a lot of people over the years because I grew up in this business. My dad was an insurance agent with Mutual Benefit Life. If you're familiar with them, they
sure.
actually collapsed the summer I was coming out of law school. But he grew up since 1965. He was an insurance salesman and. He's now retired with The Guardian, but I grew up in this industry meeting all these different people, and there was always somebody who, would develop a piece of software that was a better illustration system, or it was an advanced sales system or something like that. So I find this stuff interesting. So you didn't just really go off into the abyss and say, I'm going to invent something. You took what you knew, which was an industry, and you said, how can we make it better for the people that are working in the industry, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, look, the reality is that the best, most progressive ideas that leverage technology today, they all come from people that have spent years either in an industry or in some area of the economy that, they've recognized the problems really that, that are inherent in that world. And, right. I wasn't any different. I had the painstaking process of trying to, piece together how a sales rep was really doing and how I could coach them to become a better version of themselves. And it was challenging. So, this solved that problem. And I think that's the mindset that you need to have as an entrepreneur is solving problems.
Absolutely. Okay. So then, and at that point, it was called 25 Point Systems.
We renamed the company 25 Point Systems in the summer of 2017.
Okay. So what was it called before then?
It was called Vivo Mobile.
Okay. So Vivo came back later then. Okay. I got him with you.
Vivo resurfaced years later as a completely right. different business.
Okay. But that's the name came from. Why Vivo? Why Vivo Mobile? Where'd that come from?
So the name Vivo in both Spanish and Italian really, symbolizes something being brought to life. And,
right.
That really, from a sales management perspective and, bringing life into, where, some of the challenges lied with an individual salesperson or a sales organization. That's how we looked at what we were doing was bringing things to life and bringing okay. energy to it. And it really is frankly the same thing that we're doing now. My firm today is not to jump the gun here, but it's called Vivo Holdings. And we have a number of DBAs underneath that, but there is, there's an element of what, we still do today that is, really revolved around the same concept. It's about, inspiration. It's about bringing things to life that, that are, starting from a dead stop.
Right. Okay. All right. I'll let you tell the story. So go back to where you were and I'm following you. I'm with you.
Sure. So we launched 25 Point Systems as it came to be 2015, 2016 or so. I forget exactly when. But that, that it was an interesting ride, after that, after the first stage where we had launched our first iteration of the product, I really found myself in a really unenviable position of not really, to be candid, not really knowing what I was doing as it related to technology. I really had to rely on a lot of contractors.
Sure.
We had built out our team in, sort of a fragmented way to begin with. And, when you're a startup, you're strapped for resources. I was funding the company myself early on before I brought a couple of investors in. And, so you're trying to get $10 worth of work done on a dollar.
Right.
And so, we would kind of patch things and, and focus on the priorities that we needed to progress the product and its platform. But that, that first year was a really tough year. We made a lot of mistakes and learned from them. Fortunately, we kept moving the thing forward. And I think what kept us moving forward, we had a couple of key strategic investors that ended up becoming functionally involved with the company. One was John Beyer, who's actually from New Jersey and, great friend. And John is now actually CEO and running the day-to-day operations of 25 Point Systems. He was my successor as CEO. And we had a lot of firepower, if you will, when it came to the presence that we had on the international stage in particular. So, you know, John would spend a lot of time traveling, giving presentations and really promoting usage of the product. And that was a key driver for us in building our scale, not just here in the United States, but also overseas. I believe today we're, if I remember correctly, last I checked, we were in about a dozen countries throughout the world with some type of a presence. And every country that we made a commitment to getting into, we would hire a sales rep there to represent us kind of on the ground, the local presence, you know, kind of a local interpretation of, you know, how the product works culturally and whatnot. So there was a period of time where it was very, you know, it was very kind of touch and go in terms of, you know, developing the product, building out our team, and all the elements that I think you deal with, that every entrepreneur deals with as they're getting their venture up and running. You know, as we grew, things became, you know, a little bit more stable and, you know, the challenges just, they're still there. They just look and feel different. You know, you're dealing with different things as you're kind of growing. You know, you have an established board of directors, you're bringing in more outside capital. So a lot of pieces to the puzzle that, you know, ultimately would come into play. But I stepped away, I stepped down as CEO of the company after we got to a certain point of traction. That was about 15 months ago in June of 2000.
Oh, so just recently.
Yeah, it was a little over a year ago.
Okay.
A little over a year ago. So I had sold my the lion's share of my stake in the business to a couple of outside investors, and one was one of our current investors, and one was from the outside as well. And I stepped down as CEO, but maintain a board position, and I'm still involved as an advisor to some degree, and still have a small position in the company. Okay. But largely, you know, kind of. Achieved what I set out to in terms of getting something really airborne. And, you know, to me, it was kind of on to the next challenge.
Okay. So 25 points system still exists, right? It still works with sales organizations, not, I assume, mostly financial. That's their bread and butter. That's their focus, or they work with all kinds of sales organizations.
So interesting question. So part of the progression of the company since I've stepped down has been to expand into new verticals. So one segment, particularly in Latin America, that is being focused on right now is the automotive industry. So the unique dynamics of the sales process when it comes to automotive sales is now being leveraged with the 25 Point Systems platform as well. So a little bit different. I believe that the name of the product is our original product was called Tier 25. The new product for the automotive industry is called Car 25.
Okay, but it's a similar concept. I mean, you sell cars, not necessarily door to door. You're sitting in a showroom, but you do have to prospect and get people in and meet them and build relationships. I guess it's so that's tailored towards the automotive sales process, a little bit different than the insurance sales process.
Correct.
Certainly, right?
Correct.
Okay. So you left them sometime in 2018, then, right?
I did.
And what did you do next? Took your money and you sat in the field.
Well, if you ask my wife, she'll tell you I just hung out for the remainder. But really, what I did take a little bit of time off last year, and it was an interesting time to kind of reflect on that whole experience. And you know what kind of stuck with me from my thought process going forward was, you know, that journey over the course of 3 years or so and starting a company from scratch and, you know, going through all the trials and tribulations that go along with that. I really wanted to do something in the same kind of space, and I wanted to ideally work with other entrepreneurs that were going through a lot of these same struggles. And so the concept became, all right, I could become an angel investor and, you know, make some financial investments in a couple of companies and maybe work, you know, really in rolling my sleeves up with a couple of them as an operating partner.
Right.
And to some degree, that was kind of the ideology that morphed into what's now the venture that I'm focused on today. So I launched a company called Vivo Holdings in January of this year. And okay. Vivo Holdings is essentially a holding company for three business units that all basically come under the same entity. The first is called Vivo Launch Partners. And
okay.
that is our business incubator that essentially we have programs that allow an early stage entrepreneur, even a conceptual stage entrepreneur that hasn't even built a product necessarily yet or branded it.
Okay.
Come through our program and they can work with us. We literally have the entire first month, 6 months of that life cycle mapped out to a T. So we have a team internally here of marketers, technology development, engineers, designers, essentially everything that a technology business needs to get off the ground and running, we have on our team here internally. So what we will do is a company will come to us and we will craft out a strategy for them that's based on the type of business that they're in. All of our portfolio companies are technology companies in some form or another.
Okay.
So the first 6 months is fairly, you know, is fairly standardized. And so we walk them through everything from formation of the company, developing their brand, building out a website, social media pages, and things related to that. But probably most importantly is building out their first iteration of their product.
Right.
So that may be a digital marketplace in some form or another, a mobile application, an e-commerce platform. B2B software is a big part of what we do. But all of these companies are going through a similar type of path during those first formative years.
And you said it's a six-month program initially?
It's a six-month program that we'll take somebody through. And even though that, as those 6 months wear on, the distinctions between companies will become a little bit more prevalent.
Okay.
There's a fairly standardized process in what we'll take somebody through. And the object is to position a company to raise its first institutional round of capital, either through a pre-seed round or through an angel investment or a combination of angel investments that's designed to get them to the point where they can raise a Series A round. So it's all based on stages.
Right.
And all we do is we help them prepare for whatever that next stage is. So,
but this is an incubator, not an accelerator.
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly right.
But
exactly.
Do they apply to the program and you pick them out depending on who they are? You provide them with not only the state. Do they get any funding from your program or just the use of the staff and the space and the whole, not that that's not worth anything. It's worth a lot, but.
Yeah. So I'll circle back to that in one second. So
okay,
two
good.
Other elements of the business. So we have Vivo Spaces, which is our shared workspace here. It's a co-working space that we open in Fort Lauderdale. It's a revamped district called the Six Sistrunk District, which is about seven blocks or so west of Fat Village, if anybody's familiar with Fort Lauderdale. And we're in a real up-and-coming area, and we're real excited about the neighborhood and what's happening in the area here, and we're a big part of that. So, you know, we're in the process of attracting a lot of the companies that, you know, we're in real cutting-edge technology businesses to come into our space. Some of them work with us. Some of them will just take space with us, but a combination thereof. So Vivo
But it's a co-working space exclusively for early-stage technology startups.
Exactly right.
Got it. Okay.
Exactly right.
Okay.
And the third piece that we're in the process of raising money for right now is a separate entity that will become ultimately known as Vivo Capital. And that will be our seed fund where we'll actually make financial investments in the portfolio companies that we work with as well.
So that may be in a coordination with an accelerator or something like that. You think you're going to get to that stage too and have both, or you're just going to stick with the startup incubator phase?
To be determined. I think that what we're really focused on right now is really perfecting our model for that really early stage company.
Right.
We have a lot of great relationships with a lot of the capital sources here in Florida and beyond. And we're continuing to try and create a bridge between the entrepreneurs of South Florida and the capital sources of South Florida, which has been very fragmented, to be candid,
right.
for a long time. And so we're focused on creating a bridge with that. We host a lot of events here at Vivo Spaces, both for investors as well as for entrepreneurs. We have an element of educational event that's a fairly regular occurrence here. But we're really reaching out to both sides of that audience to create connectivity between those two sides, entrepreneurs and capital. And I think that's been a big thing that's been missing here for some time.
And how many? So you've been doing this for how long? You exited the company
launched,
about 12, 13
officially months. In January of this year, but realistically, I mean, we got off the ground in around April of this year.
So you're really in your first 6 months of working with companies, right?
We are very new.
Without giving me any names, can you tell me the kinds of things that these companies are working on?
Yeah, so there's some commonalities. We have several different companies that we're doing some type of work with right now. Some of them are on a project basis. A couple of them are what I call operating partnerships, and that's really where As I alluded to our incubator program, that's more of what that resembles. In our operating partnerships, we have a B2B software company, and we have an e-commerce business that is tied in with the cannabis space. Okay. So two very different businesses, but both very, very new. And, you know, we're helping to kind of shape their path going forward. We have, in addition to that, some projects that we're working on with some of what I was describing with marketing and technology, where we monetize that by receiving fees for essentially playing connector to you know, some of our partners, where we might have a marketing project or we might have a technology product that we help to orchestrate from a strategic standpoint. But largely speaking, you know, we're using our marketing folks or our engineers, our designers to help actually, you know, give them what they need in order to go from point A to point B. So those type of companies, generally speaking, are either digital marketplaces in some form or another, where you have two parties coming together through either a mobile application or, you know, a web version of some sort, or you have B2B software, which is, you know, really kind of our sweet spot.
And where are you sourcing these, let's call them applicants, but businesses from to get into the program?
Oh, man, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the sales side of it, right?
It is. And, you know, we made a lot of marketing investments here to help build our brand, where we've been very involved and visible in a lot of the events that are hosted in both Broward County, Fort Lauderdale here, as well as Miami. So we're very involved in a lot of the events that that you know are catering to that constituency. So we had a lot of initial traffic from those type of events, and there's a screening process to that. I myself personally have, you know, probably on average 1 to 2 conversations a day with new startups, and the majority of them are not you know ready for us, or we may not be the right fit in some form or another, but. You know, a handful of those, you know, kind of sift through and end up, you know, developing a relationship with us, and we end up becoming, you know, their partner. And, you know, from a lot of these events, you know, we have a lot of discovery meetings, we have a lot of, you know, conversations that lead up to that. And, you know, there's a lot of relationships that, frankly, we've formed that we may not actually be working with directly yet, but they'll come back. Some of them come to our events. And, you know, really what we've tried to create is a real inclusive ecosystem here too, that, you know, that caters to that whole crowd. Whether or not you're working with us, you always have a place to come, you know, to come to an event and, you know, and to be around our ecosystem. So that's, you know, that's kind of what that looks like. But, you know, we've gotten a lot from events. We also have a great network through the community here. We have a lot of great attorneys that we work with. We have a lot of, you know, external resource partners in some form or another that, you know, have either done some work for us or believe in the cause of what we're doing. There's a lot of attention on us because what we're doing, I think, is, you know, it's fairly unique and it's fairly innovative, and it's a real needed initiative here in South Florida, you know, as I've kind of alluded to. So there's a lot of attention on that. And so, you know, we're fortunate. We have a great kind of support system of people in the community that have also referred people to us as well.
Okay. And I'm always curious about this because as a business advisor and a corporate attorney, I'm constantly working with entrepreneurs. I go to tech startup groups up here. We work with a lot of these guys, and very often, and maybe more so not in the tech space, but in the general business space, I find that a lot of business owners, you know, they skip a lot of steps, you know, when they're setting up their business. And then if it's not technology driven, they're not worried about, you know, an iteration of their product, getting programmers, things like that. They're trying to open their store, let's say, right? They're opening
sure.
their business.
Yep.
And I find that a lot of them skip the step of writing a business plan. So how does, do they write a business plan, submit it to you? Is there some sort of a document that they use? Is it kind of an ongoing process? How does that fit into what you guys do for these companies or with these companies?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's been some evolution with this over time. I think the old adage of you know, needing a 25-page business plan in order
right.
to bring to a banker to get a, you know, to get a business loan is kind of a, does that mean that you shouldn't have a business plan? Absolutely not. I think that the business plan today, and this is an opinion that, you know, that I have personally, I think the process of developing a business plan is really, really critical for an entrepreneur to go through. It's not to show to anybody else. It's for
right,
it's
to that, work things out in their own head.
That's right.
I'm
amazed, to be honest with you, at how many early stage founders I talk to that really can't articulate well what their business model is, how they're going to make money.
Yeah.
They have an idea for, you know, for a product that might sound cool or something along those lines, but they don't have a model fleshed out. And so, you know, there's a lot of time that you know, that we actually spend in really fleshing that out. You know, what is this business all about, and what is the proposed model, and how you plan to make money with it. So there's a lot of that. And I think that exercise and going through a plan forces you to look at not just the model, but also, you know, what is my go-to-market strategy? So I have a product, and I have, you know, an anticipated way that I could make money. It's simply a hypothesis at that stage. But what's my go-to-market strategy? How do I plan to actually put this product or service in customers' hands?
Right.
And I think that that's where people get a lot of times very tripped up, and they will skip steps with that, because a lot of times, depending on someone's background, a lot of those questions are uncomfortable to ask even yourself. If you don't come from a sales background, for instance, the idea of picking up the phone and calling a stranger and asking them to buy your product is terrifying.
Right.
In the same way as for me, it was terrifying trying to hire a group of engineers to build my first iteration of the product, because I didn't even know what questions to ask.
Right.
So there's blind spots that exist everywhere throughout that whole process. But I think the business plan really is at the center of, you know, creating a framework for, you know, what I'm going to do, how I'm going to do it, what challenges am I anticipating that I'm going to run into, how I'm going to overcome them, who's going to be involved. There's a myriad of questions that all need to be answered. And the business owner or owners, you know, really need to have a good grasp of what all those look like, even though they're going to change.
Oh, they always change. Sure.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because I talk to people all the time about, you know, business planning, I guess, is more of a process, and your business plan is all different parts of what you're doing. Like you said, the marketing, the financials may not be in a bound up book. And I try and, you know, drive home with people that you don't need a 100-page, you know, Harvard business plan with graphs and charts and all kind of analysis, which would probably change within 20 minutes after you finished it anyway. You just need to have thought things out. I mean, I run into business owners all the time, and if they just worked through, like you said, the monetization of the business, the monetary aspects of the business, you know, just because they're selling a product for $5 does not mean that they're going to make money. So I find that they do. They skip steps. Maybe they're, you know, so excited and in love with their product, and they want to, you know, get out there, and they jump ahead, and then they open up a store, a restaurant, a website, whatever. And then they're like, they're going out of business 90 days, 180 days later, because they don't have any sales. Because they didn't do the research to figure out what's out there, what kind of competition is there in, is there, you know, is the public really going to, just because they think it's a problem, they got to make sure that everybody else thinks it's a problem. You know, you could solve a problem and we all think it's great, and then you go to market, nobody cares, you know, not enough. So I think a lot of that stuff can be worked out. And that's why I like in the incubator space, is that, you know, you guys are, you know, they're in an environment where it's like a classroom, where instead of going out in the world on their own and getting distracted and not doing the right things, you kind of keep them on task, at least for 6 months, I guess. Now, what happens at the end of the 6 month program? Or what's going to happen?
So it's a great question, and I don't really have a clear answer to that, you know, at this stage of the game, except to tell you that we're constantly evaluating what those kind of next stages look like. But, you know, really what we're focused on right now are those early stages, because, you know, that is really, you know, kind of plays to our own model for us.
Right.
But, you know, what will come out of that will likely be some type of an accelerator program, I think, with time. But the focus really right now is on really perfecting that, you know, that initial stage model for, you know, a real early stage company.
Right. So the company's not a not-for-profit. I mean, there are non-for-profits that are funded by large corporations and so forth. I work with several of them up here. What's your profit model?
So our own business model is twofold. So there's the concept initially was that a company that we would take on an operating partnership with and put in our incubator program, we would essentially take a monthly retainer and we would take a percentage of the company. So depending on how early the company was, that would dictate, you know, and some other factors as well, it would dictate valuation and ultimately what percentage of the business that we would acquire. But we're essentially taking 50% as a cash retainer and 50% as an equity stake. So that's our general model with an operating partnership role.
Darren, you don't mean 50% of their company. You mean whatever the package is, half of it's in cash and half of it's in stock.
Correct.
Okay, fine. Correct. And that, so it varies by company to company. Okay.
Yeah, a typical stake that we would take in a company to answer that question is, you know, is considerably less than I think a lot of comparable programs, some of them that, you know, you probably know the names of offhand.
Right, sure.
You know, our object is not to take over a company, although, you know, we certainly vet the ideas and the founders in the same way that a venture capital firm would. We're still looking at, you know, for solid ideas that we can get behind because we are going to get a stake in that.
Of course.
Percentage interest that we're going to acquire in a company is typically going to be under 10%.
Okay. So it's a small percentage, but you know, in that space, it's there's a high failure rate. So you don't want to build a portfolio, you know, as you're pointing out, that has no way to monetize itself because it's not, you can't sell it or turn it into any kind of cash. So that doesn't help the overall program either. Right.
Exactly. And for an early stage company, we're looking for a founder that is serious about their endeavor. And when I say that, I mean, that probably sounds like an obvious thing, but, you know, entrepreneurship has become, you know, kind of the latest sexy thing for some time that,
right,
you know, people tend to look at it as, you know, it's kind of a cool thing to do. I'll be an entrepreneur and I'll, you know, I'll hang out at WeWork or whatever it is and,
right,
you know, spend my time, you know, writing code and there's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. But I think that there's an element of seriousness that, you know, that you need to look for when you decide to spend time with a company. Number one is they have to be adequately funded in order to bridge the gap from conception to being able to raise institutional money.
Right.
And so that's something that we really pay a lot of close attention to. And we advise companies on and what that pathway looks like. Not to diverge too much from this topic, but, you know, part of the challenge I think that a lot of startups have is that they move too slowly during those you know, critical first few months, 6 months, 12 months, even 18 months, where they haven't developed enough traction because they haven't had their foot on the gas in a really deliberate way, that they're following a strategic plan that they mapped out that, you know, is designed to test their hypothesis. So
right.
What ends up happening is you get a lot of companies that I talk to all the time, strong, you know, good founders, probably a good product, and, you know, we give them probably B's across the board. But the problem is that they're sort of stuck because they've bootstrapped or self-funded the company to a certain point, and they've gotten 12 to 18 months in, and what do we think has happened? Well, they've run out of money.
Right.
And the problem is that they don't now have enough traction, to be able to warrant, you know, bringing outside investment in. Their best chance at that point is, you know, maybe an expanded friends and family capital raise at some form or another. But every business is going to take capital to run, particularly technology businesses.
Right.
But what happens is you get a lot of companies that become stuck at that stage. They don't have enough traction to raise money, and so therefore they can't attract the type of capital that they really need. And frankly, they need the capital in order to gain that traction too, in order to really build the scale with that. So it's kind of a chicken and the egg situation for a lot of these companies. But understanding that dynamic, I think, is core to our belief system and why we run our program the way that we do. So, you know, I always tell people that, you know, we're going to tell you what you need to hear, not necessarily what you want to hear. We're going to help you navigate the path in an effective way that has, you know, ultimately a successful outcome from it. Now, is every situation going to be a success story? No, we all know that. But the reality is that if you follow a templated framework that's been tried and proven, your chances are exponentially higher of making it.
Yeah, I would agree. And it sounds to me like a lot of the forethought and the planning, it is skipped in those situations. They're just, you know, money and cash flow hides a lot of things. And then when you burn through it, you know, if you don't plan on what are you going to do when you get to that bridge, you might be out of time. I don't know.
Yeah, it's very true.
Especially if they're not working with you. Right? Then what do you do?
True.
Yeah. Very so I guess true. Your job is to kind of see those things. And I guess over time, as you get more experience and more businesses, you'll see the mistakes that these people make. And hopefully you can help the new people to avoid a lot of those mistakes. I can't say all, because a lot of people are stubborn and they believe that, you know, my idea is the greatest and it's the only way to do it. And that type of thing.
To go back to your question real quickly in terms of our own model. So,
sure.
You know, that model really, you know, kind of defines our operating partnership, our incubator type role. You know, what's also materialized in a much bigger way than I anticipated up front is, you know, our ability to kind of play a strategic role in pointing startups to the resources that they need, whether those are technology related, marketing or sales related, et cetera. Pretty much all of those core needs that an early stage company is going to have. We have great team members here that can tackle any of those. And so, you know, when we do a project with someone that may involve, you know, technical, setting up their technical operations on the back end, it might involve some simple things like setting up their bookkeeping for them. Some of it is business coaching. There's a whole range of different things that we'll do, but all of those things are, so in our team model here, you know, we have Vivo is really at the center of that from a strategic standpoint. But each one of our team members plays a real critical role in that. And so we bill them out for their time, or in some cases, you know, the actual materials that in some cases are delivered in the instance of a product. But we bill them out for their time, and then we monetize, you know, an element of that as well by keeping a percentage of that.
I see. Okay. So that's all part of their plan where they got a budget for all these things.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, too, that I'd throw out there, too, you know, for, you know, especially for any listeners that might be here in South Florida, might be evaluating whether we might be a good fit. You know, we also have an element of flexibility that I think is inherent in the world of startups that, you know, that we are very, very transparent about. You know, if there's an alternative model that makes more sense in a situation for whatever reason, right, we're very open to those things as well. So we try to maintain a, you know, high degree of flexibility and making sure that if we've got a good company with a good founder, that we don't let, you know, the terms of something be a deterrent in working with us.
Okay. So if I was a technology startup, I'm looking for, especially if I'm in South Florida and I'm looking to join an incubator, I could do a search for Vivo Launch Partners. Is that, or Vivo Holdings?
Vivo Launch Partners is what that runs under, is the name that runs under. Vivo Holdings is simply the name of the entity behind that.
Okay, so Vivo Launch Partners, from your website, they can find out the whole application process, how they apply, what they got to do, all about your program, right?
Absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
And then I will put also some links in the show notes underneath the this episode when we get it out. Is there anything you want to add that I think this is great, because we get a lot of people out there who are entrepreneurs, and hearing from somebody who's not only has been successful and then is building a company that helps other entrepreneurs, I think is very valuable. So I appreciate you coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. And if I could just add one more thing too, just
sure,
as kind of aside to this, but very related, there's a, you know, we're living in an era right now where things are changing so rapidly, you know, particularly with technology. But I think every industry is, you know, is being disrupted in some form or another. And every industry is changing. Yep. You know, the legal industry is changing. Every industry is changing out there. And, you know, I think the world that we used to live in prior to, you know, the age of the internet and really the information revolution that, you know, that we're kind of, you know, experiencing right now, you know, things were a lot simpler. You know, today, you need to move fast. You have to have the right resources in order to get you off the ground and running, because you can blink and you can miss your opportunity. And I think the biggest reason that we do what we do, and I think why we are relevant in the marketplace right now, right here,
right,
is simply because every team, no matter how well-rounded it might be, is going to have gaps up front. It might be a marketing or a sales gap. It might be a design gap. But there are things that are going to hold that company back. And, you know, all the roles that we play is
your mic is getting funny again. I don't know what's happening with your mic.
No, sorry
about that. It's all staticky. You back?
I'm back.
Okay. It's a little clearer. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Nobody would hear you.
Yeah, I forget where I may have left off or where my voice was cutting off. But, you know, essentially, I think the whole point is that, you know, I think that there's a lot to be said about the ability to be able to fill holes on what your team looks like very early on in the process. Because, you know, if you don't have sales expertise or marketing expertise, you're going to struggle going to market. You just
right.
are. You could be the best product designer in the world, but you're going to struggle. And you know, that's the role that we play, is, you know, whether it's that or whether it's the inverse of that or whether there's some challenging intellectual property issues, you know, all of those areas need to be addressed. And, you know, I think too often people that are founding companies, and I've been one of these myself, you know, you try to do too many things yourself when right. you may not have the expertise to be able to do it. And, you know, it's really not, in most cases, cost prohibitive to be able to really patch a lot of those holes that are going to be meaningful.
No, I agree. I when I speak and I teach about entrepreneurship, I think that's one of the things when it comes to your your planning phase is to figure out the skills that you need to do this business. And like you said, be honest with yourself. I mean, you may be a great programmer, or you may be a great innovator, or you have a unique purview on the industry that you're looking to provide the service or product or solution to, but you better figure out really early on the skills that you're missing and how you can get them, and if you can get them, because maybe you can't. I don't know. Maybe you're not a technology business. Maybe they don't meet you, but they better figure out whether, like you said, there are cost-effective ways of doing this, but you can't do everything yourself because you just don't see the forest through the trees, you know?
That's true.
All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at beinlaw33@gmail.com. That's beinlaw33@gmail.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur has been written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.